A lot to get to today, but it's an absolute privilege to welcome to the show Senator John Marty, Senate District 66. He has been there. He's the iron horse of the Senate. This is 10 terms he has been in the Minnesota Senate. He's kind enough to take some time today to talk about the session that just was. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today, my friend.
Good to talk to you, Matt. And I do like the idea that the snow that's falling today is cottonwood and not cold stuff.
I do too. I you know, Claritin, I'll always have some stock price in that one for me there. So you have been there for so long. I have to ask about how things have changed for you, because, I mean, really, the last few years when Dowd was running the House and just the way things had been going, we've had a lot of progress in the right direction, but we are dealing with a very different type of politics today than when you started in the Senate.
Right. It wasn't that politics were softball politics, and there was always hardball politics or always cheap shots, always this. The role of big money was big then, too, but not as big. It's gotten more nasty. In the past, I think there were times when you could take people from cross party lines and see them as opponents and people you disagree with, not the enemy. And it's becoming much more hostile that way, and take no prisoners kind of thing, which I think is very disturbing. But other than that, I mean, hey, there have always been controversies, always been fights, there always will be. That's expected.
Yeah. And I always remember Jim Rhodes, the House rep that was down at St. Louis Park.
Right.
He was a Republican that was there before Steve Simon was the House rep there.
Right. And he was a fair guy. I mean, I think a lot of us worked with him a lot, and I continue to try and work across party lines. It just gets more difficult over the years.
Yeah, it definitely showed, and especially this new mentality, which initially I just thought it maybe was Kurt Dowd himself, and when Joyce Pepin was there, and just it was that crew. But the reality is when I saw Paul Gazelka and some of the Republicans' behavior this time around, I realized it's not just one individual politician. This is just how the Republicans do things. They kind of look at things as they're the enemy. Anything, any concession whatsoever is bad.
And therefore, you have to vote as a solid block without exception on every bill. And I mean, they've been remarkably successful at that. I'm not sure it's a good thing, though. If our party takes a stand, we're going to all be for it, no matter whether it makes sense or not. And that's a real troubling thing, because I think it's appropriate that people know what party people are of, but treating the party as it rules everything is not a healthy thing for democracy.
No, not at all. Let's talk. We've had a person say at the very beginning of session here and that you need to pay attention to the Senate File 1125, which was the Minnesota Health Plan, something you championed in the Senate. It, to my knowledge, it got tabled and never got out of conference.
Right. Never got a hearing at all this year. And that's disappointing, because, you know, the Health and Human Services bill was a huge bill, and we try and do this to strengthen coverage for this group, and we fought off cuts in dental coverage and vision care for low-income people. But bottom line is, we still have a very, very convoluted, very expensive healthcare system, and a lot of the fixes we do are temporary fixes. The insurance companies that provide health care right now, that don't provide health care, that pay for some of the health care now, they spend a lot of time denying coverage to people, and we have to reinsure them now because they aren't making enough money in one part of their market. So state puts in public dollars to reinsure the insurance companies, which was their business. We wouldn't have any of that if we had a universal health care system like the Minnesota Health Plan. We would, you know, our Minnesota statutes, I don't know what it is, about 20 volumes long now. We would eliminate, I would care to bet we'd eliminate an entire statute book with the regulations for insurance companies and all the things we try to do to fix things. Even take the insulin debate this year, which has still not been resolved. Very frustrating to me, because it's a deadly, deadly problem that kills people when they can't afford their insulin. What we're doing is now, and I am strongly supporting it, we're trying to put in an emergency insulin access act for people who are struggling. They don't have the money. They need the insulin now to live, and they didn't get it. So we're creating a separate program for that. What we really need to do is fix the insulin ripoff price, where the pharmaceutical industry is selling drugs for 6-10 times what they were selling for originally. Same drug, they just up the price every year or two. And, you know, we got to fix the healthcare system, and Minnesota Health Plan would do that. It would negotiate prices with pharmaceutical industry. It would use the state to deliver healthcare in a smart, efficient way.
You know, when you step back from healthcare and you look at the countries that do have healthcare in their system, the few things that come out very quickly is, one, it's far more cost efficient. People are healthier overall. Republicans and conservatives always try to put out scare tactics to try to scare people away. But the reality is, whenever presented with the option of getting rid of their system and going to an American type of system or keeping their system, they overwhelmingly, as countries, want to keep a single payer government system in place. It seems as if the only reason Republicans are against this, considering it is more cost efficient, you get a healthier populace overall, it's a win-win, is that in America, the healthcare companies, the medical device companies, the pharmaceutical companies, they look at the United States as their cash cow, the Christmas bonuses. And it seems like the only reason that this stuff doesn't get done is that they are basically, and I'll say this isn't me saying it, Republicans are getting paid with campaign donations and whatever to basically not get rid of the system in place, because the profit margins for those companies is far more important than the health of its people.
Yeah, the pharmaceutical lobby, insurance lobby, they're very powerful, and they're very generous to public officials, and they win at the Capitol. Eliminating that, yeah, of course, people in other countries aren't begging to have ours. We pay twice as much,
yeah.
Not a little bit more. We pay twice as much, and we have worse health outcomes. And so, yeah, my pitch is, hey, we want what they got. As a matter of fact, we want better than what they got. My argument is we could have better benefits that better coverage than those other countries have, and do it for less than we're spending now, mm-hmm. which is, there's a lot of slack in the system if you were spending twice as much. We could bring down our healthcare costs, cover everyone for all their medical needs. And I'm disappointed we didn't move forward on it, going to keep pushing with it. And there's growing political awareness. We're actually going to do some traveling around the state this year to hype the Minnesota Health Plan, because mm-hmm. people, when they hear about it, physicians, the last time there was a survey done of physicians in Minnesota, it was 12 years ago. At that time, almost two-thirds of physicians said they think a single-payer system was the best way to deliver health care. We've got a lot of people, when they understand what we're talking about, it makes good sense to them.
Yeah.
It's intuitive, and it's better and healthier for them.
It's cost-effective, too. It is absolutely 100% cost-effective to do it this way.
Exactly.
When you look at the political lineup, because we are playing politics here, you mm-hmm. look at the political lineup, you do have enough urban senators who are Republican. This is an issue that I know is popular within the metro area. Have you heard from any of the Republican senators that are in the area that they might be willing to work with you on this bill? Or is this one of those things where they're just shutting it down? No, it's a no-go.
I think the biggest frustration, I hear some who, well, I kind of like this concept, but you know, it's government health care. We can't have government health care. And I'm saying, what do you mean it's government health care? Well, the government makes all the decisions. Well, under our bill, you know who makes medical decisions? You do. You and your medical provider. You and your doctor. Who chooses which doctors and hospitals you go to? You do. That's not true now. Your employer, based on your plan, your health insurer, based on your plan, or the government, based on Medicaid and so on, they make the decisions for you. Under our plan, you make the decisions who you go to, and the decisions on what's covered and how it's covered are made by you and your physician, not by somebody else. So is this government run? No, it's patient and physician run. And to me, that's what a good healthcare system ought to be. So their opposition, the Republican opposition, isn't based on we don't like it or we like it. It's based on we're not supposed to be for something that sounds like government health care, so therefore we're opposed to it. And, of course, when you're getting the money from this, from the industry, that makes it easy to want to favor that. But let me make one thing you said. You said in the metro area, you think it's probably pretty popular. I think it is. It's interesting. I think it's more popular in greater Minnesota. Why? Because people are having more trouble getting access to health care there.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I really, we don't have many DFLers in greater Minnesota anymore, and not many in the legislature, but in the public in greater Minnesota. I think one of the reasons Trump almost won was because they don't like Affordable Care Act. We know that. And they want something better than that. And Trump basically and Democrats were saying 4 years ago, were saying, hey, we love Affordable Care Act. We're going to keep improving it. And Republicans were saying, let's throw it out and replace it with something else. That was a bogus promise and a hollow one because they had nothing to replace it with. But people are getting desperate when they're spending more for their insurance, their health insurance, and there for their home mortgage and scared with what they see coming in the future. And so I think that's one of the reasons Bernie Sanders did very well in lots of greater Minnesota and why Donald Trump ended up winning, not because they have anything in common other than people were desperately looking for a different health care system, one that actually covers them and that's affordable.
Well, and I think that the Affordable Care Act did a lot of good. I mean, it really did.
Absolutely did.
But it was poisoned by the way it was covered. Right. It was reported on.
And it didn't fix things. It covered a lot more people, which was very helpful. And I mean, it cut the number of uninsured in half. The trouble is, it doesn't bring down the cost. It doesn't do the other things. And the Republican solution is, well, let's throw that out and replace it with greed. I mean, nothing. They have no replacement for it. And to me, I would never want to throw something out until you have something better to replace it with. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we should have. We should have bipartisan support for this. We should have a lot of businesses. And I think as businesses get to understand it, they come around to it. But that's a hard sell because a lot of them have never taken a look at it.
Well, and by the way, thanks for holding me accountable. You know what? As the DFL, we need to fight in every district. It is not just a metro area. And you're right. DFL, I think one of the reasons why they made we had a strong showing in 2018 was we went out into those districts and
Absolutely.
We saw strong DFL.
Talked about things. Yeah.
Exactly.
I heard from one candidate in greater Minnesota district that DFLers probably think, oh, it's the one we can't win. And candidate was called up and wanted to talk about Minnesota health plan because he said, it sounds like the kind of thing people in my district would really love. And I said, I think they would, and I think it's worth talking about. And I think it's not something I'd say, oh, in a safe district you can talk about it. Well, a safe district, you don't have to worry about talking about it. Mm-hmm. What we need it for is people in the tough district saying, hey, we want to replace it. What's not to like about a healthcare system where you make the decisions, not some insurance company, where the choice you have is not whether you have a high deductible plan or a super high deductible plan, but the choice is whether which doctor you go to, which clinic you go to, and you make the choice. It's not a hard sell. We just have to stand up for what we believe and make it clear we want a doctor and patient run healthcare system.
The Republicans, you brought up the Emergency Insulin Act, the Alex Smith Act. The Republicans, I think, made a horrible misjudgment on this when they had the chance to add it to the special session bill. They voted in unison to not allow that to go on that bill. And ever since that vote went down, and they basically threatened the House saying, if you add it, we won't pass the bill. Ever right. since that vote has happened, Senate Republicans have frantically tried to reframe the argument of why they did. The reality is, you just said it, there are loopholes in our system. And this is a prime example of people that make more than $17,000 a year that do not have health insurance and they can't afford insulin. We should have that stockpile there. Talk a little bit about that, because there sure does seem to be a lot of Republicans who are maybe even hoping for another special session so they can go correct that mistake.
And I'll gladly have another special session to correct that mistake, because I think we've got to provide the emergency insulin. And it was interesting because a bill very similar to what Senator Melissa Wicklund from Bloomington, a DFLer, offered on that last night. We were trying to get everybody to agree to it because the Speaker of the House said she'd add it, and all three leaders, the Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Governor all had to approve it. So we went and got confirmation that the governor supported it, that the speaker supported it, but couldn't add it unless the Senate Majority Leader, Paul Gazelka, added it. And we asked him, and he decided not to, apparently, because they said no. But the thing I want to point out is that bill, very similar, a little more stripped down, but very similar to the amendment that was offered was offered by a Republican to the same bill 3 weeks earlier, to the Omnibus Health and Human Services bill 3 weeks earlier. They offered it, I think, to claim political credit, and they voted for it, passed 65 to nothing. So two people were absent, but everybody else voted for it. Everybody, with no exception. And then the thing that was offered the last night was very similar. It was filled in a few more numbers and so on, but I'm not hearing from people that that's what the difficulty was. I think there was some politics involved, but hey, you know, if we can pass in a special session, if Republicans can claim credit for helping do it, great. I want it to pass. That's what we need to get happening.
By the way, that's the first time I heard Senator Gazelka single-handedly kibosh the Emergency Insulin Act. That's a very interesting.
Well, that was just because they agreed there were no amendments could be allowed. The three leaders said they would accept no amendments unless all three of them would sign off on it. So I went and asked Senator Gazelka because he said, we'll talk to Senator Benson, and Senator Benson told me she was told the Speaker of the House wouldn't approve it, and so I went to the Speaker of the House and to the governor's office and said, look, I'm not asking if we can add it to the bill. I'm asking if we can get all three of you to add it to the bill. Are you one of those three, as one of those three who has to sign off? Will you sign off? Yes. So two of the three would sign off, so I went to Senator Gazelka, and he would think about it, and the answer was not the right one.
No, it wasn't. I want to ask you one final thing here, because you had a little frustration with the openness in the decision-making. Now, my perspective on this, dear God, I thought this was far more open and visible than what we've had, especially with Kurt Dowd, where he would run into a room with three or four people, come out and throw a bill at everyone and say, vote now, don't even read it. You know, the concept we had here, I do understand some of those final negotiations are in private, but I thought it was more open. But you feel as if the process was still closed.
Right. I feel that those private negotiations at the end should be open. And the biggest, and this is not a partisan issue, because I can guarantee you when Republicans are in control, it's behind closed door. When Democrats are behind closed door. And it's partly because people feel the arguments I hear is, well, there will be grandstanding if we do it in public. And, you know, they're right. Right now, what goes on in those rooms, the private negotiations, is real negotiations. And if you let the media in, people will grandstand and make statements for the press and the media and everyone. I agree. They will do that. So instead, what we do is we lock them out, and then they meet in private, and then they go out in the hall and make their grandstanding. And we don't know if they're telling the truth or not in their grandstanding then. And to me, it's something that people in power of every party, it's human nature, kind of, if I know something and you don't know it, I got some power that you don't have. And it's a natural thing. The DFL party, actually, when I say this is not a partisan issue, I'd say the negotiation stuff here being public is not partisan now, but it was in the 1970s, the early 70s. It was a Republican legislature, and DFLers got elected to office promising to open the doors to state government, and to their credit, they did so. Committee hearings in general were closed to the public before then. They passed the open meeting law, they passed requirements that legislative committees be open, and so on. And actually, even most conference committee negotiations were open to the public for a couple of years at least. And then they realized, well, the meetings have to be open, but we can just step away from the meetings and negotiate in private. And my argument is, if it's the public's business, it ought to be done in public. And to the argument that some people have said, honestly, they'll say this, they will say, you know, we can be more frank when we're having these discussions in private. And my response to that is, it's pretty awful if you think about it to say, we can be more frank in private, which means we'll be less frank when we're talking in front of the public. But we do not want our public officials to be less frank. So let's do it all in public, and then when what they say in private will be the same thing they're saying in public. And I think it's change that's much needed, like the getting rid of the garbage bills, which continues to get worse under both parties. But to me, what the DFL did in the early 70s, promising opening up government, they made incredible strides forward. It's been slipping slowly backwards since that time. It's time to reopen the doors to government. And my pitch is, hey, it doesn't have to be a partisan issue. I understand people who, when they're in the minority, they, well, This is terrible. They shut us out, and then when they're in the majority, they kind of are in power. Well, it's more easy for us to do this. And I'm not saying it'd be easy to negotiate in public. It's not so easy to negotiate in private. But it seems to me if it's important that we have our routine committees open to the public, it's important that we have the most important budget and policy negotiations in public as well at the end of session. And I've heard nobody, when they say, well, it's easier to do it. We can do a better job if we do it in private. I've heard nobody say we should go back to the 1960s and before, when routine committees were closed to the public. Why? Well, because it's a public business. We ought to do it in public. You'll get unanimous agreement from legislators on that, because we've gotten used to that over 40 years. We know it's the way we have to do it. If we made the law the same as we have for local governments, it has to be done in public. We would do it in public, and in a few years, we would say, of course, we got to do it that way.
If the Republicans complain about theatrics, I have never seen a larger group of drama queens and drama kings in this last session. They were getting ready for off-Broadway there. I really do like that point. And the honesty is this, is that what it does prevent is that kind of mentality of I can speak, you know, like this in private versus in public. No, you just have to speak. And if you're against something, then you need to face the public and tell them you're against it.
Face the public and tell them. Because, again, the insulin bill in private, it was in the private negotiations. One, the House chair says one thing, the Senate chair says another thing, and we can never know. It's huge policy issues fall off to the side because of things like that. And so let's do it all in public. And if they can't face the public and vote against something, well, then they shouldn't vote against it.
Well, we do know for sure that Senator Gazelka shut it down, and then the Senate Republicans voted it down. So at the end of the day, that's where it died. It would die with the Senate Republicans. Senator John Marty, I can't tell you what a treat it is to chat with you. I could talk an entire hour with you. All my best this summer. Let us know where you're going around to talk about the Minnesota Health Plan, because we'd love to help you promote that a little bit as you get some good crowds out there and get that information out to the public.
I appreciate that, and keep in touch.
Thanks for
your good work.
Senator John Marty, District 66. Let's take a quick break. Come on back for a quick segment. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.